Welcome to the Hypnotic Healers Podcast, your home for insights and insider knowledge about hypnotic change work. With your hosts, control practitioners and hypnotists, Nicole Mazzucato and Anthony Gitch.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Hypnotic Healers. I'm Nicole Mazzucato, and as always, I'm here with my friend and co-host Anthony Gitch all the way over there. Our usual disclaimer before we get started, neither Anthony nor I are licensed medical professionals, psychologists or psychiatrists. So please do not make any changes or alterations to any treatments or medications that you're on based on the conversation you hear here today. Take what you like, leave the rest. While you're leaving stuff, you could leave us a like, a love, a heart, a thumbs up, a review, get in touch, drop us a message, say hello.
And as always, it's wonderful to see you too, Nicole. Welcome, welcome, welcome. And I hope things are going well for you on your side of the planet.
Indeed, as well as they can be.
I know the feeling.
Yeah.
Winter has started to settle in and moods are changing, which is always a lot of fun here in the Pacific Northwest because they deal a lot with the seasonal affective disorder. And it turns people into kind of grouches, I think, to some degree. And they think that it's a wonderful excuse to be able to treat people poorly. But today is what we're here to discuss is the use of hypnosis with cancer patients.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting topic. And I'll be honest, not something I've got experience in. So yeah, I know a number of people that do specialize in working with cancer patients, but not something. Actually, I lie. I have worked with somebody before, now that I think about it. Yeah. Anyway.
And was it for palliative care? Was it for cancer reversal? How was hypnosis being used in that instance?
It was for palliative care. Yeah, yeah. Definitely okay. Somebody that was at the end of their life. And I was asked to do some work with them. And I ended up just doing some calming work just to help them feel a bit softer, a bit more soothed, I guess, on their journey.
Right on.
Yeah. And that felt, yeah, it felt quite nice to be able to offer that.
I bet it did. Help them, you know, ease their transition from this plane to whatever follows next. I think that that's actually really important for people to be able to experience a peaceful ending to this journey. Right?
Yeah. Because I think
surrounded by people who care.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think some people can get quite nervous at that stage, right? Because we don't know what comes next, really.
Out of our control, absolutely. And it's like I tell people, you know, a lot of people say, "How's your day going? What's up with you?" And I'm like, you know, every day above ground is a good day. And they're like, "Yep, that's true." And it's like it's better than the alternatives, I think. Right? I don't know what the alternative is. So I don't know if it's better on the other side or not. We'll only find out once we get there. And once we get there, we're not going to be who we are anyway, because we're not going to be attached to this way of thinking as it is, if we're thinking at all. Maybe we just end up in the dirt and we just end and everything is just done. Who knows?
Who knows? Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about.
Correct. We're here to talk about cancer. So, and I'm lucky enough that I have got to work with several people who are experiencing cancers at different stages in their life. Right now, I am blessed enough to be working with some folks that are in the early stages, and we are of the belief that they, in fact, can turn that key off. I've always believed that cancer is created within us, obviously, and so it can be that key can be turned on and it can also be turned off. I mean, it exists in every single person on the planet. Whether or not that it's activated is the question.
I don't have a scientific enough background to confirm or deny that.
Well, so, I mean, all it is an overgrowth of cellular activity, right? That's what tumors are. That's what that sort of thing. It's a lack of oxygen because, you know, if you deprive cancer or you know, oxygen is anaerobic. And so the more oxygen, you know, this is all goes back to my Qigong training and breathwork training and that sort of stuff that, you know, one of the important things about breath and taking deep breaths is to alleviate that sort of thing and to hyperoxygenate the body and the microcapillaries in all of the internal organs, which can help turn that system off. That's my belief, right? Not everybody buys into that. And that's why not everybody can use hypnosis and those sorts of techniques when it comes to treating, you know, their particular diagnosis.
Yeah, look, I think, like I say, I know a few people that specialize in working with cancer clients, because we don't talk about patients, do we?
Correct.
And I think, you know, I my understanding is there's a number of ways of working with people with cancer, and a lot of it can be around helping alleviate symptoms, helping with pain management, helping with anxiety, helping the body to embrace the medication and allow the medication to do its thing. And rather than go through that, you know, go through the treatments and the processes, kind of resisting it and having a really terrible time with it, having a better time with it and feeling the best that they can, understanding that the medication is there to do a job to help them. But again, I mean, so many people are going to have so many different beliefs and ideas about this and approaches. And I think for me, the one thing that has been hammered home and in all of my trainings, not just hypnosis, we don't talk about healing anyone. We don't talk about curing anyone. We're certainly not doctors, unless you are a doctor, or you know, or a nurse, or you have that kind of medical training. So, yeah, I mean, I would never lay claim to being able to help somebody cure anything.
No. Nor would I. And I think you're right. I think all the things you mentioned are the things that are primarily used in our industry when it comes to working with cancer clients. And that is, you know, not becoming so ill from the treatments that they're receiving and being able to better emotionally cope with the problems or through the challenges that they're experiencing while they're going through treatment, whether it comes from family and that sort of thing. And I thought is what you were going to say through all of your trainings and everything is make sure you stay in your lane, right? Because like you said, we're not doctors. And we, or at least I'm not a doctor. I know you're not a doctor, and I would never claim to heal anybody. One of the beliefs that I have, however, like I said, is that I look at the body a little bit differently. And if somebody comes to me and they say, listen, I believe that I can do this, I'm like, well, then I will do whatever I can to help that become a reality for you. But I don't make any promises or guarantees that we're going to be able to work directly with that part. Because, you know, in control, as you well are aware, whenever we do any kind of parts work, you know, we're working with individual aspects of the mind, so to speak, right? And the immune response system is a part, essentially, the way I look at it. And we've got even practitioners that claim when they begin to feel ill, like they've got a scratchy throat or something like that, they speak to their immune system and ask it to boost up, and the immune system responses, and the next day they feel fine. You know, and again, you know, the mind over matter sort of thing. But who's to know exactly what is creating that, right? Is it also because they took a zinc, pill that night and that kicked things in? Who knows? But yeah, I know that I enjoy working with these types of folks, particularly ones that really want to have a positive outlook and want to continue to live their life rather than listen to the doctor that says you've only got 3 weeks left. You better go fill out your paperwork for your funeral. And they buy into that diagnostic tool or, you know, and say, okay, well, this is it. It's the end. And I'm just going to give up and die now. You know, granted, I'm going to work with that sort of a client to, like you said earlier, help them experience a better journey on their way out the door. But I much prefer to work with the clients that are like, oh no, I want to beat this.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I think unfortunately doctors, I don't know if they realize or not the power of their words and how powerful those suggestions are in terms of, you know, kind of life sentences or death sentences and things like that and diagnoses and whatnot. And it takes a very strong person to walk out of a doctor's office and say, I'm not taking that as a final destination. You know, I'm going to go and see some other doctors. I'm going to go and see some other people. I'm going to, you know, really take responsibility and put myself in the driving seat and find out all that I need to find out, and do everything that I need to do. And we often say, oh, I've done everything. I've been everywhere. No, you haven't. You've done about five things and you got bored or you fed up, you know, you sort of said, oh, I've come to the end of my line. I've seen five different practitioners in different things. That's not everything. You know, everything is infinite. There are so many different ways that we can support our health, support our body, support our mind. So it takes a very strong person to come away from a doctor's office and saying, I'm not going to take that sentence. That's, you know, I'm going to go and fight this. And I think oftentimes when a doctor gives I'm calling it a sentence, you know, they give a what's the word? Like a
diagnosis.
Yeah.
I don't like diagnosis. Because it's a label.
Yeah. But when they give I can't remember the word, but anyway, when they give something like that, you've got 6 weeks left or whatever.
Oh, a terminal kind of, I'm not going to try to put words in your mouth. Sorry.
I can't even remember where I was going with the point really. Anyway, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. People, it takes a strong person to really and truly take their health into their hands. And that involves educating yourself. It's a much harder road, actually, in a sense, because it involves truly educating yourself in a lot of different ways, and really looking up a lot of information from a lot of different sources.
Yep. And there is a ton of information out there. There are a ton of different practitioners, both on the medical side and on the non-medical side, that have all sorts of different processes and protocols in place. And, you know, one of the things that I think a lot of people forget, And I mean, I'm not one for conspiracy theories or that sort of thing, but the medical profession doesn't really want people to get well and doesn't want people to have a lot of these tools that are available to them because it cuts them out of the picture and it doesn't make for good profit margins, particularly when it comes to pharmaceuticals, right? And so I think that there are a lot of folks out there that are dismissed even though they've got these protocols that have proven to be successful in a lot of these different areas. And those things are just kind of poo-pooed aside because it doesn't feed into the established ideas that this is the way it's supposed to be. Into those death sentences and those terminal, you know, diagnostic tools that say, this is it. Once you have this, it's done, it's over, goodbye. And you know, this is the other option is these $100,000 worth of, you know, treatments that you can have and leave your family with all of this debt to try to save you for 6 months of, you know, more breathing time. It's an interesting dichotomy that the health industry is in general, I think.
Yeah, I think another part of, you know, supporting cancer, people with cancer, is the carers. And I think that's often a missed market in a sense. You know, there's not, I don't think there's enough support out there for carers, people that are looking after sick loved ones, people that are working in hospices and things. I don't know if you guys have hospices there.
Yes.
You do.
Yes.
But they're often forgotten, the carers, you know, and there's a lot of pressure on them. There's a lot of strain on them. There's a lot of emotional, you know, they're often bearing the brunt of the physical and emotional pain of the other person. And then they don't necessarily have an outlet to express themselves because they're holding it all together because they're on call 24 hours a day. It's very difficult and it's very demanding physically. It's very demanding emotionally. And yeah, I think it's a forgotten, they're often a forgotten people.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of talk about that. There are better support groups out there now that are happening because, you know, like you said, they bear the brunt of it, not only from the patient, because they have patients, we don't, but they do. And so they're not only getting it from the patients they're working with because of their, you know, their suffering, they're picking up all they can on that, but they're also getting it from the family. Of the people that are going through, you know, the people that they're taking care of. Their family members oftentimes are short with them. They, you know, why aren't you doing this sort of thing? And I think that they are, like you said, that they're kind of a forgotten bunch. There's not a lot of support for them. It's a job that I would never want. I know that as much as I love people, I don't think that would be something that I would be, that I have the emotional capacity to be doing day in and day out for a whole career.
Yeah, I was also referring to family members that are full-time carers. There are plenty of family members that are full-time carers for loved ones who are going through things like cancer. And I've seen it firsthand how draining and how hard it is and it can be for people.
Absolutely. Well, any kind of end of life care for family members. It doesn't matter if it's cancer, Alzheimer's, anything like that. That's hard on people. That's really hard on people.
And I think there's a huge place there for supporting those people. Mm-hmm. You know, both even, you know, during and after, there's a huge recovery process there as well, because a lot of people that have been full-time carers, And I don't want this taken the wrong way, but I I've seen it firsthand. There's this huge sense of relief when they do pass, mm-hmm. because it has been so demanding. And I think that relief can also bring a sense of guilt. You know, I feel guilty because I feel a sense of relief, but it's not like people don't want them there anymore. It's just that it's become such an unpleasant life for both. That both people are suffering in the end. So there can be a huge sense of relief there of, okay, they've moved on now, but that person often, depending on their outlook and their approach, can be left with guilt about that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I know somebody who just lost their father and they'd been taking care of them for quite some time. And when I asked them about it, she's like, well, you know what? I feel relief. It's more of a celebration, she said, and the whole family is looking at it that way because he's finally free, and now we've become free of this as well. We're not going to miss him. It's not that we don't love him, but we are all finally free of his disease. And I told her, I'm like, that is an amazingly healthy and inspirational way to look at it. You know, celebrate the life. And celebrate the good times. And now it's, you know, you can move on. Not that there's not going to be times of sadness where you may be taken to your knees because, you know, the holidays have come up or whatever kind of anniversary has happened, but that you're no longer having to deal with the day-to-day intricacies of taking care of this person that you know, is ready to go.
Mm. Yeah. And I think in that sense, you know, in certain cultures, we've really kind of, you know, tied death down to this terrible, this terrible thing, this terrible event that we learn to fear because it's, you know, it's the darkest of days. Whereas a lot of other cultures do take it as a celebration. You've been here, you've lived, you've experienced, and you've moved on. Whether that, you know, whether they believe in an afterlife, in a next life or not, I don't know if all of them do. But either way, you've had this experience in whatever form you've had it. And, you know, we're grateful that you've had that experience.
I know that I would, no matter how I go, I want people to celebrate that I was here.
Hmm.
Have a party, grow a tree, you know?
Yeah. But coming back to cancer patients, it's not just, we're not, you know, I think we're kind of directing the conversation quite a lot at, you know, terminal cancer patients, but loads of cancer patients that, you know, they go through treatments or have to have, you know, organs removed or whatnot, or tumors removed, and then are on kind of medication and carry on with their lives and whatnot. And I think there's so much work we can do with those people as well, in terms of helping them move through the emotional pain, the grief, because there's a lot of grief that comes with that sort of thing as well.
Anger.
Yeah, anger, all of those sorts of things. And again, I can't imagine there's anybody that doesn't have experience of this firsthand with somebody they know.
Right, right.
Yeah, and there's just so many ways of helping people.
Yep.
In that sense.
Like I said, though, I'm of the belief that the body can turn it on, the body can turn it off. I believe in remission. I believe that it can happen spontaneously. I have seen it happen in people, not people that I have personally worked with, but people that I personally know over the years that have had like breast cancer, a tumor in their breast. And when they went in 6 months later after a major lifestyle change and attitude change, the tumor was gone. Explain that, right? The medical profession can't, no one can. It's one of those things that happen. And that's why I believe the body can do whatever the body wants to do, whatever we allow it to do, right? Because I am one of those woo-woo practitioners. I believe in the chakra system. I believe in those energetic power points, you know, in our bodies, and that things are directly related to that kind of stuff. And when we can pull all of that together, when we're open to all of the different possibilities, then a part of that openness becomes the possibility that we can reverse what is happening, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's a matter of allowing those ideas to settle in and really owning them and going, yeah, you know what? Why not live with that mentality than the other mentality, and see what it does for me? Because there's no harm in that.
No, but the scariest thing about that is the discipline that it takes to do that, to,
oh boy,
you know, to remove one mindset and replace it with another one, to change old habits and switch them out for healthier habits. We've spoken to a number of people on here. Dr. Chris Black, I think, has always stood out to me, and I've always remembered that conversation really well, really clearly. And I remember I very much took from that the amount of mental discipline it took for him to go on his journey of, you know, his healing journey. That's not something that just happens from one day to the next. Like, oh yeah, I've just decided I'm going to think more positively.
Right.
You know, there's some real deep work that needs to happen there. And I said before, you know, it might be the harder road. I think in a sense, it's the more challenging road, because you're having to take personal responsibility in that sense. And there is a lot of discipline that's involved in that, rather than just handing yourself over to somebody else and saying, okay, well, you do everything.
Right. Well, and by handing it over to everybody else, that's not taking responsibility then, right? I mean, this is where it comes into making sure that, you know, I mean, even with regular meditation work, I mean, how often do we say, yep, I'm going to start that this year, and I'm going to be doing it every day, and I'm going to create this manifestation, and I'm going to start this abundance thing, and I'm going to start just a 20-minute meditation every single day that's guided, da, 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 and then you do it once or twice and it just falls to the wayside, right? I mean, even something as simple as that, a lot of people can't even hold on to. And it's not that they're not interested, but we become complacent, right? And you have to remain constantly vigilant as far as maintaining that positive outlook, as far as waking up each day and saying, today I'm going to have an amazing day, and how am I going to be a happy, healthy individual today, and how will I heal myself today? And being able to really spread that energy and maintain that momentum, that I think is a tough thing for a lot of people. I know it is for me to maintain that momentum of always being positive, and not that toxic positivity, but just remaining a positive person and trying to remember the good in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Well, I'm lucky enough to not have experienced this myself. So I don't know firsthand what it's like getting that diagnosis, holding on to your, holding on to your outlook, your mindset, and having to do that work and choosing which route you go down. I've not been sat in that seat before. I've been sat in other seats, and
yes, you have,
and taken other had my own decisions to make, but yeah. This particular one that we're talking about today, no, I haven't. So my experience is limited.
As is mine. And you know what? I mean, let's be honest. I hope to never have to make that kind of a decision, right? I mean, I think that we can all kind of agree that nobody ever wants that kind of news set upon them, right? Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't make life easier, for sure.
No.
And on that note, I think that we have dived into this as much as you and I are knowledgeable about this sort of stuff, right? I mean, I've got tons of paperwork and lots of different reference stuff, but that's not really pertinent to what we're discussing. And so, if anybody does want information on that, get in contact with Nicole or myself, particularly myself, and I will share all of the research papers that I have gotten. A lot of that has been from one of the other control practitioners that we know, Katie Demack, who has worked specifically with many cancer patients or cancer clients. And she's a font of information, and I will share the information that I have and be more than happy to refer people out to her as needed. So get in touch with us if you want more information or need to follow up on any of the kind of stuff that we've talked about here today.
Yeah. And in the meantime, take care.
Yep. We'll talk to you all next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Hypnotic Healers Podcast. Don't forget to leave us a review and follow us on Facebook.